Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Penny Lane Podcast. On today's episode, Blaine is joined by Kira Turner to discuss her journey through trading, real estate, and overcoming fears. Today's show is brought to you by Roback. Make sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel and find the Penny Lane Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Kira, hi. Welcome to the Penny Lane Podcast. How are you?
Hi, Blaine. I'm fine. Thanks. I'm so glad to be here.
Yes, I'm so glad to have you here. We had a pretty interesting day in the market, I would say. Did you trade today?
I did trade today, and it was a pretty wild day. I agree.
I feel like every day, though, in the past week has been wild.
It has been. The market goes up, and you think the next day maybe it'll go up more, and it doesn't. It goes down, and then the opposite is true, and so it's just all over the place. There's a lot of uncertainty.
And a lot of range. I mean, these are huge big ranges. Daily candles that we're getting.
Yes, we are.
So and then we today, had Netflix. Today is October 18th. It is the day of the Netflix earnings. Now, last time Netflix had earnings, or maybe it wasn't the last time, but the time they missed so badly and it just tanked for like 3 months. Those were my biggest trades I've ever had on that day. And if you had asked me, knowing that we had had less subscribers and we were going to miss a couple of marks on earnings, I read that earlier this week, I was like, oh, I'm going in again. Like puts I was like all in on puts. And then luckily I didn't have them because Netflix is raging right now.
It is. So I have kind of a secret weapon that I trade with, and his name is David Prince. And he really understands how to dig into the numbers and what will make a stock move. And so we spent a lot of time today talking about how Netflix, what would really be important is their advertising revenue. And let's see whether they would meet the 4.4 million. I guess 4.4 million subscribers, I think, was the estimate. But basically, he's saying it's more based on the advertising at this point. And sure enough,
what do you mean the advertising?
Well, they're bringing in money through advertising. So they have a lower price tier for subscribers that includes advertising. I think it means you have to watch commercials like in the old days.
Okay. I didn't know this.
Really what I'm interested in, but I guess there is a large number of people who would prefer to pay less and watch the commercials.
And fascinating. Not me. I'm all in for let me pay more.
I am too. I know. I said, wait, isn't that called cable? I mean, that's kind of the old cable TV.
Netflix has brought in a new revenue stream. I had no idea. That's brilliant.
Right. And so they're also shifting their model similar to what Apple did. I'm not sure how long ago they did this, but Netflix has grown to the point where it's not a high growth company. So they're focusing on different streams of revenue at this point. Even though they're trying to get more subscribers, of course, their advertising revenue, I guess, is going to be something to really focus on. So that's something that David is really knowledgeable about. I'm more knowledgeable about just the trading, but he did lead us through the after hours earnings and how to interpret that and what it meant. And so a lot of people on our chat did really well and bought the stock after the earnings report. So it was a pretty exciting evening.
So was his strategy was not to try to predict what the earnings report would be. So you guys were not in prior.
Right. We were not. A few people were in some calls.
Okay.
But most of us were waiting to see where the numbers were, what the numbers were when they came out, and then reacting. You know, if they're much better than expected, then we would jump in and buy. And it turns out they were much better, and the stock dipped, I don't know, like $20 or $30, and then ran up $40, and it was a wild evening. So a bunch of people bought on that.
Yeah,
very exciting.
And obviously something that you're not going to feel as scared about if you have someone at the helm who can talk you through that versus me just like puts. No.
Right. And we spend enough time thinking about it ahead of time. So that's comforting too. you know, this is what we think is going to happen. So, yeah, it was good. It's really helpful.
Cool. So how long have you been trading?
Oh gosh. Okay. You're going to be kind of surprised. I started in 1994.
Okay.
Yeah. So I traded the whole .com run up from late 94 all the way through, I guess about 2000 is when the market crashed. And that actually was my biggest year ever, was that sell-off in 2000. I guess it was maybe late 99 to 2000. And then I stopped trading in 2001 and took a long break until 2019. So I have big chunks of time where I've traded full time, and that's been the way I made my living for those first 7 years, 6 or 7 years, and now again. But in the meantime, I had 3 kids and own a bunch of real estate and did a bunch of traveling and all kinds of other things. So it's a lot of, you know, a lot of past experience, but more of it is, you know, way back when in the 90s when things were really different.
For sure. So a huge sort of like marker for me in my life is 1996 when the Olympics came to Atlanta. I'm from Atlanta. So I'm like, okay, there's before 96 and there's after 96. So you're trading before the Olympics were in Atlanta. How did one trade back then? What did you do?
You know what's really funny? The software was completely different. So it was just like a black and white screen with one stock at a time, and you could just watch the prices move, but there were no fancy charts. There was no color, different colors for different levels of price or anything like that. And it wasn't legal for me to enter my own order. So I had to call my order out loud to a broker. She sat on the other side of the table from me. And I would say, Terry, please buy me 1,000 shares of Intel, for instance. And she would enter the order and then she'd say, okay, you're filled at this price. I mean, it's just miles away from what we do now where we just type it in and hit buy. You know, it was so much slower. You could watch news and trade off the news because it was so slow. And I mean, it was just like kind of like the Wild West, except that now the market's like the Wild West anyway, in a completely different way, but.
So where was this taking place? Where were you sitting across from a broker?
I actually went into an office. So I lived in Austin, Texas, and they called it SOS. It was Small Order Execution System. And there were 15 or 20 of us that went into an office every day and traded there. And so the people running the office had hired, you know, enough brokers. So each group of 3 or 4 of us had our own broker. And then over the years, it got up to, I don't know, we probably had 100 traders or something in our office. And, you know, at that point I left in early 2001, and then I think it kind of got smaller. I think the market got harder to trade for a while, and I don't know, most of the people I knew kind of went off and did other things, and it just got faster and faster as computers got better and better, and, you know, the speed of the information got faster, so it's really changed. Oh, and the other thing, stocks used to trade in quarters and eighths rather than in pennies. So the moves were kind of faster because it would jump by 25 cents at a time instead of jumping by 1 cent at a time.
Whew, I've just recently learned a lot about futures, and the jumps are like wild to me. The like increments, yeah. I'm like, oh my God, it's more than I can handle.
It's pretty wild. I do a little bit of futures trading, and it's definitely different. It's challenging. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It can be either really good or really bad, you know, if you're not being careful.
Another thing that I find so interesting is that someone said to me once, and I'm a pretty new trader, so there's a lot of aha moments for me, but somebody said that stock price actually does not move up and down like it does on a chart. It moves sideways and in increments, like sideways, the way they plot it, it looks as if it's moving up and down. But I can like see that so clearly when you're talking about you're just watching your screen, like, and you don't have that visualization of the chart. Like, of course the price is moving kind of in a sideways pattern. Anyway, I thought that was...
Well, that's interesting. since I didn't have any charts way back when, I mean, I did in the evenings, but I couldn't see them real time during the day at first anyway. And so I learned to just, they call it reading the tape, where you just watch to see what price it's trading at. And you learn a pattern and a rhythm through that. And I don't think, people don't really have to learn that so much now, because a lot of people aren't really familiar with it.
Right. I think some people do it and do it really well, and they're a tiny little segment of the new people who are in the market from Robinhood, who are just like, you just watch it go up and down, and then you're making your picks or whatever.
Right. Yeah, Robinhood, that was a whole new style of trading, you know, just very limited information and really quick and really easy on your phone and not very much money required in your account. And it was, so I have a 21-year-old son and he opened up a Robinhood account and I was like, okay, I can help you trade. And he liked it for a while. And then when it got really difficult, he was like, no, Mom, I don't want to learn to trade. This isn't fun.
Yeah.
It was only fun if you're making money.
Yeah. Totally. You get that dopamine hit and then it goes away. When
it is a lot more fun when you're making money, for sure.
Totally.
Yeah. So anyway, that was my introduction to Robinhood and about as much as I know about it. But
did he open his account during COVID times?
He did. He opened a Robinhood account to learn to trade some stock and options. And then he was also trading some crypto. And at one point, his whatever $300 investment was worth, I don't know, $6,000 or something. He was so excited. And of course, it went right back to probably zero. I don't know.
Sure.
He lost it all. But, you know, it was a good learning experience for him.
Totally.
Because kids don't want to listen to their parents.
Nope.
Like if it seems too good to be true and it's going up like crazy, you know, it might come back down.
Yeah.
And he just said, no, I'm going to just hold it. Okay, you can just hold it, I guess. It's up to you.
Did he get in GME and AMC?
He did not trade those two names. And I'm not sure why. I guess because he was doing crypto and crypto was even more exciting than those. And those were crazy.
Yeah. Crazy.
And so, you know, looking way back when to the dot-com run-up, I mean, I had never seen anything like AMC and GME. Things were crazy then, but not in that sense.
Yeah.
That was unbelievable. I remember shorting some GameStop and I lost a couple $1,000s so fast I could barely get the order in.
Totally.
And the money was just gone.
Yeah. I bought 100 shares of should go like on my gravestone. I bought 100 shares of GameStop and lost like $300. Bought like expecting it to go up. I bought it at like $200. Of course it went way, way up, but it ticked down a little bit. And I literally was like, this is it. This is the top. I'm about to like lose. I mean, I like totally freaked out and was like, I don't have the stomach for this. So GameStop got my $300. God bless you. I couldn't do it. So.
I know. And then after a while, for me, I was just like, I don't trade those stocks. It's just too much. It's too stressful. I'll trade things that I know where I feel like I know what I'm doing, not just these random moves that I have no control over. And they're so fast, I can't do anything anyway.
Yep.
So, you know, but I guess kudos to all the people who made a lot of money in them. That's great.
I'd be so interested to know how many of those people made a significant amount of money and then had the wherewithal to just stop. Keep their money. Or if that's your first trading experience, aren't you going to just be like, well, that's how it goes. You just got to find the next one.
Yeah.
And then you just put it all in and then you just, you know, quadruple your money. No problem.
It would be really tempting to just keep trading, wouldn't it? And so easy to give it all back. Mm-hmm. Even if you were smart enough to sell when you had a big profit in GameStop, because I know they were pushing just hold and hold and hold. So who knows how many people are still in or maybe gave back most of what they had made. I don't know. Although it's held up pretty well. A lot better than AMC, which is now down, I think, about $5.
Right where it was. Yeah. I mean, maybe it was at four. I don't know. But
yeah, it's been a shocking sell-off in all these names that were, well, that I was trading, you know, at all different prices, but they've come down so much. Mm-hmm. It's stunning, you know, more than I ever have really seen in any other market. And I guess I've really only traded the 2000 bear market. I missed the 2008 and 2000. What was it? I don't know. The other one I missed, because I just wasn't trading then, but this is pretty stunning to see stocks lose 80 and 90% of their value.
Totally. Another stock that was sort of in that basket for me was FUBO. Was it FUBO? It's TV. It's soccer TV.
Yeah.
Was day trading that when it was a $65 stock and then had to stop trading it. And the other day in Discord, I heard somebody like, I'm going to take a day trade here on FUBO at $3 or something. And I was like, that's not the same stock. There's no way. And I pull up the chart and was like, oh, wow.
And there's so many. Yeah.
Do you know what DWAC, uh-huh. Do you know what that is now?
Isn't it still DWAC? It was DWAC.
No. Do you know what price it is?
Oh, I think it's like 12.
No. That one too. I was trading it the high like 70s, not long ago.
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago, and it is now 1655.
Wow. Wow, so, I had the same thing on Lucid.
Right.
I loved to trade Lucid.
We did trade a lot of Lucid when it was going up. And that was another one that David was really vocal about saying, hey, this thing, the market cap on this is insane. You guys should be happy. Take your profit and walk away now. Don't push it because it's going to come down when people figure out how overpriced it really is, considering the limited number of vehicles they're going to make.
Yeah.
And boy, he was so right.
So right.
Yeah.
So right. What a nice thing to trade with someone with such a kind of broader overall mm-hmm. view. I don't have that. I have about a, you know, 1 week view or so, you know, something like that. But having just a larger view of like all the different variables.
It's really interesting. And honestly, I just come from a trading background, so I learned to look at price and the chart and maybe a very small amount of news. And so I've really learned a lot from him in the past couple of years because I've never met anybody who can just assimilate all this information and kind of turn it around and explain it in a way that makes sense and in a way that takes other variables into account that I hadn't even thought of, you know, mostly like market psychology and you know, what are people thinking? It's one thing to look at the numbers and whether they beat or not, but what is the market expecting? Is the market expecting a beat? Because if they're expecting it and they beat, then it probably won't go up. Mm-hmm. But if it's a surprise, you know, then that's a different story. There's so many things that go into it. It's been really interesting.
Fantastic. I've grown. So when you first started, how many women were there trading with you?
None. Yeah, I was the only woman. I think there were like probably 12 guys and me. Several of the brokers were women. So there were other women in the office, which was nice, but no other traders. And then I'm trying to think, like even now out of our chat that's, I think has probably 170 people on it or so. I mean, 5 or 10 of us are women. It's a small number. The women who are on there, however, tend to do pretty well. You know, they tend to be wonderful. Really thoughtful and maybe, I don't know if it's fair to say they're more careful or not, but they just put thought into their trade and their trades and do typically pretty well.
I love that. I heard somebody say, when I first wanted to start trading, my husband made me talk to some people who trade just to like, whatever, that was his caveat. You have to have some conversations. And one of the people I talked with was a man, and he was like, women make better traders because they have no problem admitting when they're wrong. Now, that's a generalization about women, obviously, and who knows if that's right or not, but I really tucked that as like a little feather in my cap of like, here's a leg up that I have. And there's, you know, I feel like in the trading world, it's so often, I mean, it's so rare that women are celebrated as having some kind of advantage or whatever. So I was like, yes.
Yeah, that's kind of a nice thing to hear that you do have an advantage here. Yeah. And, you know, it is true that traders that don't have an ego do a lot better. They trade better because they're not so invested in being right. They just want to make good trades. And so, I know that we talk about that a lot. People who are willing to learn and listen and let their ego go away and leave it at the door or whatever, they tend to be better traders. So, yeah, you heard right. So the people that you talked to, did they encourage you to trade or did it discourage you or neither?
So I was really kind of on a mission. Like I was going to do it. I don't think there was much that they could say to dissuade me, but they did. I have started several ventures in my life of like, I'm going to start doing this thing. And they're all in different areas. And I really am like, I'm just going to like put this on my back and make this thing. I'm like very determined, I guess. And so there was not anything they could say to stop me. And I don't know if any, you know, I think people tried maybe to tell me the statistics of like, you know, over 90% of people fail and day trading is, you know, dangerous and all these sort of things. I'm sure people did try to tell me and I just wasn't hearing it. And then I lived through 2 years of absolute hell of like, this is very difficult. And obviously a ton of people fail and all of the things, this is sort of kind of dangerous and all the things, but luckily I really got to hang on to that stubbornness of like, I'm in it too deep now.
Well,
I guess.
Clearly
not
you're very,
blood. I don't know.
Well, you're clearly very determined or you wouldn't still be here. I mean, it's an easy thing to just give up on and leave. So the fact that you're still here is really impressive.
Thank you. You could also say maybe I'm addicted to it. That could, I would think that could also be sort of fair. I really like it. Quite
I
a bit,
love it.
So.
I just think it's the best job ever. So it, I understand. Yeah.
I'm also an artist and I really think trading is incredibly creative. It like activates all of my creativity too, which I think it is hard for people to understand, but I don't know.
So I haven't thought of it like that. I always think of it as problem solving. Like I like,
which I also love,
find the pieces of a problem and figure out how to fix it or what the outcome will be. And so I can look at trading that way, like who's buying and why and how far will it go? And, all those sorts of things. And that's why it appeals to me because I like to solve problems.
Yes. And there is something so lovely about solving a problem. And then if you can't solve it, that's okay. You get a whole new problem the next day, whatever it is. Like it's all, it's, you get to give it a good try and hopefully you're a little bit better at solving them than you are at not solving them. But I don't know. It's nice that you can just close all your positions and open your account the next day and be like, clean slate.
Yep.
Let's go again.
Start all over. Yep. Yes, it is. I do love that.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Especially like, I would love if there was a magical button where you're like red on the day, but you're done for the day, where you could just be like, shut her down, put me back at whatever my balance is, but I don't want to see that. Any like, let me open this later and have all of this disappear.
The magical button. We all need one of those.
I'm fine to accept the balance. I just, let me move past it. So you got into real estate after your first stint in trading. What, tell me a little bit about your real estate career.
Oh, well, so after trading, I was married at the time and we were looking for income that wasn't really dependent on the economy. So we were worried about the economy. And we wanted, basically, you know, we wanted income to keep coming in, even if we went on vacation or didn't work as hard that week or that kind of thing. So we decided it would be real estate. And then we decided the lowest risk real estate that we could think of was mobile home parks. And so we started buying mobile home parks, figuring that in a recession, people don't typically move out of mobile home parks. You might move from a nice apartment to a less nice apartment, but then the next step down would probably, you know, potentially could be a mobile home. And yep. there's really nowhere to go that's less expensive.
Yep.
We couldn't find properties in Central Texas that we really liked. So all of our properties were down on the Rio Grande border. So down in the Rio Grande Valley of Texas, which is on the Mexico border. And that was an area that was growing and had a lot of what we call winter Texans. They're people from the north that come down and spend the winter. So we bought multiple properties down there and ran those for, I don't know, 10 or 15 years. And they did really well. I mean, my husband did more of the operating than I did because I had three kids at, you know, after a while. And I was really busy with them, but real estate was a good business and, you know, it paid the bills and I learned a lot about a totally different kind of business. But I did always sort of miss trading because I just really love trading.
I have a couple of questions. First, what does owning a mobile home, what does that entail? What do you have to do as an owner to upkeep that?
So operating or owning and operating a mobile home park, I mean, first of all, entails finding a manager and managing that person. And that can be tricky because
not everybody
wants to manage a mobile home park. Then you've got sometimes issues with the tenants, like in any rental property. Some of your tenants are great. Some of them are just a hassle to deal with. You've got to kind of learn the regulations of the county where your property is because some judges are, you know, sometimes it's better to give people a little leeway and other places want you to just file the eviction notice and tell them right up front so that they don't generate this bill that grows larger and larger with late fees. And, you know, you kind of let them dig a hole for themselves and then you feel like you're being nice. But then I remember in one case, the judge got upset with us because we let them get so far behind on their rent, they could never pay it. So there are things like that that you just learn as you go. Mm-hmm. And then of course you've all kinds of like requirements with the bank loans to keep a certain kind of insurance. And you're always renegotiating that insurance every year. And there's a lot of, I don't know, kind of detailed paperwork, but I guess in general, you know, once you get it up and running and it kind of runs with not, you know, not a huge amount of time commitment. And so that was the appeal for us.
As far as like water and sewage and electricity, do those all come through like a central area and then you disperse them? Or does everyone have their own contract with like the power company?
It can work both ways. And the way that I would prefer is that the tenant signs up with the electrical company and the water company and the sewer company, and they are responsible for paying their own bills. Because to bring electricity in and then divide it up, it's always this kind of random thing. You know, you've got some of it that goes to the park to maybe, for instance, to keep the streetlights on. And then you've got to go around and read everybody's meter and assign a portion to them and then bill them and then collect from them and then pay the utility company. So it's a lot easier if the utility company just works directly with the tenants, but it doesn't always happen that way.
Now, when someone gets evicted, they own their mobile home.
Yes.
Yes. So they can, they would remove it.
Yes. The problem is if they owe a bunch of back rent, you know, then you want to not have them disappear into the night with their mobile home without paying you. So it's tricky because, you know, unfortunately, a lot of people just don't have the money to catch up on their bill. And so sometimes you just let them go and just be done with them. You know, they can move on and you can move on and find a new tenant. But moving a mobile home's not that. It's not like an RV where you just hook it up to your truck and drive away. You actually have to get permits from the state department or the highway department. And it's a kind of a big process of jacking it up and taking it off the supports and moving it to a new place.
Bo.
Blaine.
We're hat twins.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah, we are. I'm so excited that we're sponsored by Roback now. I have been wearing my gear ever since it came in the mail, and I love the colors, but I especially love this little dog. I wore him to the pool last night, and people were giving me the thumbs up.
Yeah, this stuff is awesome. I had heard about it before and always wanted some, but now that I have it, it has exceeded all of my expectations.
Is this your first time receiving a gift in the mail from a company and like opening it and checking out the product?
It might be. It certainly is associated with the podcast.
I have gotten those before and I was blown away by the quality of this product. It far exceeded what I thought that it would be. And I truly think I'm just going to like live in it all fall.
Yeah.
It's so comfortable.
Yeah. I've been playing golf a lot this summer. And so I like all my golf gear. But the thing about golf shirts is like the sleeves are always too long and they're always too baggy. And like, you know, I'm relatively in shape guy. So this fits me perfectly. I still have full range of my arms to swing a golf club. And like I could wear this doing anything, not just golf. Like they got hoodies, they got quarter zips. It's like nice and stretchy. I love every single thing I got.
Me too. I love it. It all looks so good together. It's part of a set. And I feel so thrilled to be able to offer our listeners a 20% off code, which is
Penny20.
All right. So you go to roback.com, which is roback.com. And you just enter Penny 20, you get 20% off, and thank us when your order arrives because it's lovely. You also know how much I love opening experience. Like I'm such a snob about packaging and the way things are presented, and it was a treat.
Yeah, the shit's awesome. Don't even have to like, I would just promote this to anybody regardless of a sponsor or whatever because this shit slaps.
Also, you've already been like low-key pumping out the Penny 20 to your closest friends because you really believe in it.
No, absolutely. I'm sending this to all my friends because it's shit I think that they're going to want anyways. So, you know, why not take advantage of the discount and rep it everywhere?
Totally. Thank you, Roback. We appreciate you.
Thanks, Roback.
So you, I mean, and then you, if you got a new tenant, they would then have to move their home. What a mess. So you want to keep your, the tenants. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. If you can keep your tenants, keep them happy and have them stay, it's much better for everybody.
And then what if they're just like, I'm in a deep money hole. I can't pay to live here. I can't pay to move the home. I will go. Does that happen?
It does. And at times we've bought homes from people. You know, we've just made them an offer on their home. You know, we'll take it, we'll rent it out or sell it to somebody else. And you can go, you know, go do what you need to do. And that's worked
out.
That
seems like the ticket there.
Yeah.
I mean, and then you could take their back rent out of that.
Exactly.
Offer. That seems like the solution. Yeah. Here I am. I'm problem solving on mobile home parks. Like, what am I?
You'd do great if you had to run a mobile home park.
No, that would be fun for about 6 hours. And then I'd
exactly.
be like, okie doke. Yeah,
I wouldn't have been the best person to be on the ground actually running it. So I was here on the phone with a manager, but not on the ground.
How often, I'm just fascinated, how often is he calling you like the Joneses again, or they're having noise disturbance, they're behind on their rent, where these people are a problem?
I mean, in some properties, it's every day, and in other properties, you never get the calls. You know, some of our properties were for over 55, people over age 55, and so they're retirees, and they're pretty calm for the most part. I mean, They want to sit around and play cards and drink all day. So there's that. And they have lots of time to complain about like a pothole or a plant that got moved or dug up accidentally, or their lawn's not cut right or something. But some of the family properties, you know, the police would show up and arrest somebody occasionally, or somebody would threaten somebody with a baseball bat, or people park on the lawn. So you've just got a real variety of people and situations. And, you know, some of the people, especially down there, I mean, I'm sure some of them were linked to Mexican cartels and things that I don't want to even know about. But, you know, I'm sure those elements of people were in some of our properties.
Totally. Now, how'd you get out of the mobile home park game?
Well, I got out because I got a divorce.
There and you go. That's a clean cut. Yes.
I was like, you take these, and I'm going to go on my way and do something else. So it worked out fine. I mean, it was a long process to, you know, disentangle from multiple businesses, but it's what I wanted. I had three fairly small kids at the time. And I just couldn't see myself driving down to the Mexico border to check on a property. It wouldn't work. So it was the right thing to walk away from that and move on.
And then how long between walking away before you got back into trading?
It was about 5 years. And I have to say, I did try trading for a brief time right after I got divorced. And I needed to make the money. And that is a terrible situation to be in when you're trading, where you feel pressure to make money because you've got to support your family, because it increases the stress so much. And I actually couldn't make money. So I lost, you know, what I had allowed myself to lose. And I stopped and I thought, I can't trade anymore. Like, I lost my skill. I don't know how to do it. I don't know what I'm doing. And I went and got a regular job. And I was just miserable.
Now you got to tell me what the regular job was.
Well, so I have a finance background. So I worked for a mortgage company for some friends. They were very generous and gave me a job in their finance department. And it was, you know, it was a nice job. But it wasn't challenging me in the way I wanted to be challenged. And I wasn't really problem solving. I was like compiling numbers.
Right.
And it just wasn't my thing. You know, I'm used to having a lot of autonomy and freedom, and I can decide what is the most important thing to get done that day. I don't really need somebody to tell me, but that's not what they needed. So I did what they needed me to do. And I, like I said, I lasted about a year, and it was, you know, I was so grateful for the income at the time. Mm-hmm. But as soon as I could, I was ready to try trading again. And then I got into a position where I was less, you know, it was less important for me to make money. I had a little more padding, a little more flexibility. And so then I could actually start to learn again and figure out how to adjust my style to meet what the market was doing, which is, you know, different than what I used to.
Like, clearly when you came back, this is a whole new ball game.
It is.
It's a whole new thing.
Oh, I've taken my trading and like turned it upside down. Like, I have skills from before. I have tape reading skills and understanding of the market and what chart patterns I like and things like that. But I learned to buy breakouts. And in this market, if you buy a breakout, you're going to lose every time.
That's not working for you.
Flip it over and I buy things on their way down, you know, and I sell on the way up. And that's completely different. I swing trade now too, and I have some longer term trades that are, well, one thing I've held for probably a year. And before, it was strictly day trading. So at the end of every day, I'd go home flat. Mm-hmm. And I still do a lot of that, but I'll have a couple trades on that are swings and maybe, you know, one or two long terms. So it's...
I have just recently done some swinging, and there is... there's something nice about opening your account and just seeing some green, like...
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I don't have to work as hard today as I did... Yes, whenever. Yeah. There's something very nice about building into that.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it also takes a skill, right? To figure out where to get in, because I did try to swing some things as the market was coming down And after a while, I just got disgusted and thought, I've got to be done with this. It's affecting my trading. It's making me stressed. And I've got to get it off my plate and focus on, you know, making money every day. So, you know, there's that too. I've had to learn that. But it's all good. It's part of the experience of learning and trading a different market. And somebody asked me the other day, you know, how am I doing? You know, as a new trader. And I said, well, you're doing great, but let's revisit when the market changes. If you're struggling, you know, you may have to change some things, because to me, it seems like the market always is changing. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes it's more subtle, but you've just got to continually adjust.
Yep. And isn't that so interesting that all the variables, the trader, the strategy, the market, your emotion, how you're doing in your life can, I mean, there's so many moving pieces that, you know, having one strategy and one setup that you trade over and over and over, like, what if it could be that simple? Like, if I can just be disciplined enough that this is like the one thing that I do and I will be profitable for the rest of my life, like, that's the like breakouts. Think about all the people that made money trading breakouts in 2020 and 2021. And now you buy a breakout and it's just stuffed. Like, you can't be stubborn in that way of I'm a breakout trader.
You're right.
You know?
You're absolutely right.
Yep.
Yeah. If I could trade one pattern over and over again, could I do it? I'd like to think that I could, but that would be hard for me to rein in everything else that I like to do.
Yep.
So I don't know.
So how much success were you finding kind of on your own? And then we've mentioned David several times. Do you mind just fleshing that out and telling me a little bit more about who he is, where he is, how you got in contact with him?
So David is somebody that I met on a chat. He was in a chat room. I was really impressed with what he was posting in the chat room. And I found out that he was going to start his own chat room. And I thought, well, gosh, I want to be a part of that. Definitely. Because he's the smartest trader I've listened to. And so I made sure to get in touch with him and let him know, hey, I really, really, really want to be part of your chat. And they took me on as a trader. And the chat room that I'm in now, I'll just tell you, I mean, we have people apply to get in because we only take experienced traders. And I was afraid maybe they wouldn't take me. I don't know. I didn't know what kind of traders were applying to the room.
Yeah.
So I get in the room and I started posting. And I guess being female, he was like, well, this is kind of unusual. She's posting her trades. And I probably posted some pretty good trades, at least sometimes. I'd like to think I did anyway. And anyway, it got his attention. And we started talking on the phone. And he, I guess, you know, asked me a lot about my background and my goals and what I wanted. And then he said, well, would you be interested in moderating the chat room? And I just thought, that's like my biggest fear, public speaking. I'm terrified. I don't know if I can do that. So I had to go away and think about it for a couple of days. And then I thought, well, I have to do it, because if I'm scared of it, then clearly I need more work on this. So now I have to do it. Plus, you know, I thought, well, that would be really cool. I'd meet more people. I'd get to chat with people and get to know traders all over the country and all over the world. And this is something I really need to do. But, and I always laugh when I tell them this, like the first 6 months or so, every time I turned the microphone on, I had sweaty palms, racing heart. I mean, it was just really stressful for me. His background, and it's not now, I'm fine now, but it took me 6 months. And, you know, I'm so glad I did it, because I do have friends all over the world and, you know, funny people to trade with and lots of community support. And hopefully I add a lot to the room. And David has a background as not a trader. He started trading a little bit later in life. I'm not sure what age exactly, but he was doing private equity deals and then taking them public. And I guess he was trading on his own and wanted to be in the other chat room and just realized he really wanted to put together his own little group of people that were more knowledgeable. So we try to not spend a lot of time on basic questions like what is a call option or, you know, that kind of thing. Because, you know, in a room with a lot of new people, you'll get that. But now we've got a lot of really experienced traders. And so people constantly throw out ideas. So it's actually a really great place to be just to see what everybody's trading. You know, somebody will say, I'm going to short the futures here. Or I noticed this stock has a great pattern. And then another person will say, hey, this biotech was approved for the certain drug. And, you know, other people have ideas for longer term options plays. And so we have all these ideas that are very, I don't know, people come from different angles, different industries, they're using different securities, be it options or futures or stock. And so it's been a really, really great room to be in.
I have a question, just as someone who's been in a couple of rooms. How do you filter that information and make it not, I'm just going to take this trade because so-and-so said it's a good trade and they have a good track record? Like, how do you kind of say what is true for me and what to listen to?
Well, I always recommend that people who join our room just sit back and watch for the first week or so. Like, get a feel for who says what. You know, some people do talk a lot, but maybe don't always have the best ideas, or maybe you don't really understand. I don't really understand their ideas. They're not for me. And then other people just have a knack for picking up on, I don't know, something that maybe is overbought and is ready to turn and go down or something like that. So most of the people in our room can only type. There are three moderators and we can speak on the microphone and everybody else just types it in. So, you know, at any point I can go back and pull up one person's comments and see what they've been saying. And I've just gotten to know people. And I suggest that everybody does that too. So you get a feel for what works for you and who takes more risk and, you know, who doesn't. I also find for me, it's really important to not listen too much to anybody else, because if I don't believe in the trade, I can't execute it very well. Mm-hmm. And if I have a lot of people just giving me ideas that I think, oh, that might work, I shouldn't do it. It has to be an idea that I think that's a great trade. I want to do it. I have the confidence. And then I execute the trade as it should be or as I want it to be. But yeah. I have to be careful. You know, if I've got two people, one saying the market's going to go up and one saying the market's going to go down, I need to just not listen to either one and figure out what I think the market's going to do.
Mm-hmm. I think, at least for me as a woman, I spend a lot of time, honestly, just being like, oh, well, this is a man who has been trading a really long time, so his idea must be more valid than mine. And I've lost a lot of money.
Interesting.
Thinking that just because so much of it is male. Someone is a male and they have a lot more experience.
Yeah.
That they, you know, and that's not to say that their trade isn't great and it doesn't work. It's not to invalidate anything about them. I don't know how to execute their trade. I don't know. I mean, I can get in when they get in. I haven't been watching it the same way that they've been mm-hmm. watching it. I don't necessarily know their price targets. You know, I, for a long time, these dogs, I know you guys can hear the dogs, traded on just sort of like a kid in a candy shop. Oh, Netflix looks like, you know, it's going to break out. Oh, I'll just hop into that. But it's just, hey guys, it's just such it's a chaotic and kind of blind way to trade. And there's been such a big thing that I've had to go through of like stepping into my own sort of way of trading while also being able to filter through a lot of information and decide this information is useful to what I want to do.
Mm-hmm. That's a really important point. I mean, that's something that takes, I think, a long time for some of us to learn. because it's easy to be influenced by somebody else, especially if you think they're good. Uh-huh. And gosh, I even, you know, it's the worst thing ever for me to call a trade out and have it not work, mm-hmm. because I feel terrible. But on the other hand, everybody makes mistakes. Yeah. But I do try to say to people, you know, give them some warning. Here's what I'm seeing. Here's where I think it might go. I'm watching a lot of momentum in my trade. So a lot of times I'll wait and see how it trades to decide how long to stay in. But it's different for everybody. And everybody has to make that determination on their own. And other things they have to decide are how much size to put on, how much money to risk. And, you know, I can't tell anybody how to do that, really. It's all up to them. So I do coach people on that. But I have to say, you know, this is your decision, ultimately. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody can tell you how much you're willing to lose.
I've also gone through things with other traders, and maybe it's not just men. I happen to trade with a lot of men where if my normal position size, let's say, was $1,000, if it was another person's idea who I expected, maybe I would like double that position size. Then you're right. you're fighting a losing battle every single time. You don't know where their stop is. You don't know how much risk they put into it. There's so many things you don't know. And then that trade starts to go against you and you're like, well, and it just can be such a difficult thing. And I don't know if men go through it to the same extent. I'm not sure.
Well, we definitely get people on our chat who will say, Kira, where's your stop on this trade? Or where do you expect this will go? Or, will you be adding more if it goes against you? You know, that, so people on our chat have the ability to ask, and sometimes I'll get on the microphone and ask David the same kinds of things. Like, you know, what's your plan? What are you going to do with this? Are you holding it overnight? Are you going to add more? But I could see if you don't have the ability to ask somebody all those questions, you're kind of out there hanging. You're on your own. Yeah. You know, totally. You might as well just kind of thrown a dart, maybe. I don't know, depending on how good the information is.
Yep. And I don't know. I also find even knowing other people's stops that's sort of difficult for me too, because you don't know what kind of position size, you don't know. And then how do you react if you get stopped out? And then, this has happened to me more times than I can count, is I will follow someone into a trade and they're like, my stop set, you know, let's say it's a short, and they're like, my stop set, I'm not thinking, whatever the stop is, they say this is the stop, and I will like put a stop there and kind of walk away. I'm like, I'm trusting this trade. I like to do that. I like mm-hmm. to put on a trade and then be like, Jesus, take the wheel. This is where I want to stop out. This is where I want to sell. And I'm just going to let the market do what it does. And then I'll get stopped out and it'll go like a dollar beyond my stop, and then it'll reverse and come back and do exactly what it is. And then I will say to the trader, like, hey, you got stopped out, right? And 10 times out of 10, the answer is, it was a mental stop.
Yes. Like, and they go, I'm still in it. I'm doing fine.
I'm still in. How are you still in? We had the plan. The plan was you sold at the stop. And I'm just like, F me. Like, I can't do this. I wasn't built for this. I didn't understand the plan going in. I didn't like, and it is just, and then they'll post it or they'll share and it's like they made 500% on this trade. And you're like, oh my God, so frustrating. And it just makes me be like, I cannot follow another person into any trade ever.
Well, you know, there's the incentive to make your own decisions and not listen to anybody else too much and all of those things, because it's hard.
It really is. I've also combated that by narrowing what I trade to like so narrow that no one can actually like really totally help me. People have given, you know, I know the strategy and that is great and I'm working the strategy, but like what I'm doing is so narrow that I cannot even really be super influenced because it's just...
Well, that's a good thing, right? I mean, yeah, you're really focused on what you need to do.
Yes, I'm doing well for the first time ever in my trading career, knock on wood.
Good for you.
But it has come with a lot of, like, I can't worry about anything except what's best for me.
Yeah. Kind of. Well, and I think that's a good attitude to have because you have to just focus on your trade and what works for you and, you know, see how that works. And when it doesn't work anymore, then you adjust it and make some changes and try to figure out a strategy that does work.
Which is such a big fear of mine. Like, what if the SPY stops making these massive moves every day? Like, what do I do then? Or what, because I mostly just trade SPY or IWM or the Qs or the indexes, right? And I'm like, well, what do I do? But problem for another time.
Yeah, well, I mean, I always say to people, if you're having trouble, lower your size. You know, keep trying to figure out what you're doing, but do it on smaller size. So if you have losses, the losses are smaller. And then once you figure it out, you can increase your size again.
Totally.
You know, that's what I do, because you don't want to have huge losses that you have to make up. So figure it out and don't lose too much money in the meantime. Yeah, that's the bottom line for me.
Yeah. And I've been thinking that so much, especially in this downturn in the market, of like the name of the game is to survive. Like, the longer you can stay in the game, the better chance you have of ultimately being successful in it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, I'm sure everybody's seen the charts of, you know, if you lose 50% of your account, for instance, then you have to earn 100% back just to make up your losses. I mean, it's astronomical how much you have to make back. So if you can avoid those losses in the first place and just stay in the game, like you're saying, you're much farther ahead.
For sure. So where, tell everyone where they can find you on the internet.
So I'm on t3live.com. So that's the letter T, number 3, L-I-V-E.com. You can read about the Inner Circle. That's the chat room that I'm a moderator in. It is a room that you have to apply to, but we love experienced traders. And I'm also on Twitter at Kira's Epic Trades. So that's K-I-R-A-S, Epic Trades, Kira's Epic Trades. And you can message me there or, you know, read a little bit about my bio on T3 Live.
Perfect. And we will include a link, of course, in the show notes to all of those things. I wanted to ask a final question about the experienced trader aspect of that. Do you feel like being in a room of vetted experienced traders that you're sort of like continually leveling up each other? Like you're growing as a group by bringing in such good people?
I do. Yeah. I think that's one of the real benefits of this room is that like one of our guys is an expert in banks. He only trades banks, at least as far as I know. Another guy has his own little biotech company and really pays attention to the biotech stocks, things that are so over my head as far as like the science behind these drugs, but he can scan through it and say, this is a big deal. You need to pay attention to this one. Then we have other people that are like they manage family money and have access to, I don't know, things that I don't have access to, like private offerings and, you know, IPOs and things like that, that is a whole different world to me, but I learn from them because they post information. I can ask them questions. And everybody on our chat is really open and really supportive. So it's a nice place to ask questions because nobody laughs or, you know, there's a lot of joking around in downtime. So it's a lighthearted place and it's fun, but, it's, you know, asking questions is expected and encouraged. So I mean, my learning has gone straight up the past 2 years, which I love.
That's amazing.
To me, that's just so much fun.
So it's like a think tank where there's also, I don't know, it's like, if I'm very into a basketball metaphor, but it's like playing on the Team USA. Like when you're playing on the court with the very best people and basketball, you have to level up. It's like a given that you're going to be playing at your absolute best when you're in a room of all-stars, where you're on a team with all-stars. I love that so much.
Yeah, certainly you'll play better. And I mean, I still have days where I think, gosh, I mean, I didn't do very well today. I'm disappointed in myself or frustrated with my trading. But, you know, like you said, tomorrow's a new day. I get to try again. And there are people I can talk to about it and say, hey, you know, what am I doing? Or what do I need to change? Or, you know, can you help me? And totally. So there's always lots of help available.
I think the fact that you're trading as a moderator on voice, that level of transparency has to bring a certain amount of authenticity and vulnerability of like, you're not making mistakes in the corner and hiding from them, right? Like True. You have to continually face what you're doing and reassess and stay on top of it. It's like being in the gym every single day. And what a wonderful thing.
It is. It's wonderful. Sometimes it's really hard, I have to admit. Sometimes,
totally.
You know, sometimes I'm wrong. And I have to get on the microphone and say, guys, I am so sorry. That trade didn't work. We need to get out of it and just take our loss and move on. But, you know, people do appreciate the honesty. And, I mean, what else am I going to do?
What else are you going to do?
So, it's still the best job I could ever think of. I love it.
Well, I'm so happy to have met you. And I really appreciate your authenticity and my favorite part of this interview was when David asked you to be a moderator and it scared you and you knew that it was something you needed to do because it scared you. Way to really step into an opportunity, you know?
Well, I'm so happy I did it, but yeah, it was a scary thing for me. So it feels good to have gotten over the hump.
Well, usually the scariest things are the most important steps to take.
They are.
Good Thanks. For you for doing
it. I appreciate that.
All right. Well, I hope you'll come back. This was so much fun.
It was. Thank you so much. And it was great visiting with you. And I look forward to listening.
All right. Thank you.
By accessing this podcast, you acknowledge that the Penny Lane podcast makes no warranty, guarantee, or representation as to the accuracy or sufficiency of the information featured in this podcast. The information, opinions, and recommendations presented in this podcast are for general information only, and any reliance on the information provided in this podcast is done at your own risk. This podcast should not be considered professional or financial advice. Unless specifically stated otherwise, the Penny Lane podcast does not endorse, approve, recommend, or certify any information, product, process, service, or organization presented or mentioned in this podcast, and information from this podcast should not be referenced in any way to imply such approval or endorsement. The third-party materials or content of any third-party site referenced in this podcast do not necessarily reflect the opinions, standards, or policies of the Penny Lane podcast. The Penny Lane podcast assumes no responsibility or liability for the accuracy or completeness of the content contained in third-party materials or on third-party sites referenced in this podcast, or the compliance with applicable laws of such materials and/or links referenced herein.